Hey listeners, welcome to this special 10th anniversary of Wicked edition of the Innuendo and Outuendo podcast. This podcast celebrates the 10th anniversary of Wicked opening on Broadway. This is Christina here with Shira.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Had a nice relaxing weekend, so found my Halloween costume, so you know I'm ready to go.
Oh, that's exciting.
What about you?
I'm good. I have a lot of work this week, but I'm very excited for this Wednesday. I love Wicked Day very, very much. And actually, fun fact, a month from tomorrow is going to be the anniversary of the first time I saw Wicked.
Awesome. That's great.
So we have a special guest here with us today. Who is the winner of the contest to participate in our special edition podcast. His name is Mark. He'll take part in the Wicked News later on, and right now we're going to introduce him to you all.
So Mark, just say hi and tell us a little bit about, you know, your love of theater, Wicked, you know, whatever.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today. I started off with you know, regular theater, seeing all the shows previous to Wicked, and when it first came on, I started watching all the clips on YouTube and, you know, watching the classic videos with Adina and Kristen. Living in the Midwest, I wasn't able to get out to New York. So when I learned that it was coming to Chicago, that was a perfect opportunity for me to go see it. So I went down there and I saw it. And then from there, I was just hooked. And it became sort of a regular thing. And then since then, I've gone off and seen it on both of the tours as well as Chicago.
Nice. Nice. So, do you have any other shows that you like?
Some of the recent ones that I've really gotten into. I know it's been gone for a while, but Aida is a show that I really like. You know, a lot of the big ones that I've been touring around, Billy Elliot. I really like that one. Next to Normal is another good one. I just saw the preview for Big Fish while I was in Chicago. That was pretty good.
Cool.
Just all the big shows that come around, as well as some of the smaller ones that not a lot of people know about.
Right. Well, yeah, the Chicago area does get a lot of stuff, so I'm sure it's a great area for theater, so.
Yeah, we have some good shows this year. Last year was a little bit lower on the show caliber, if I may say so myself.
Yeah, I looked at the lineup, and this year it looks pretty good. They got a lot of shows coming through over the next few months, so I'm excited about that.
Good, good. Thanks, Mark. It's great to hear from you, and we're happy to have you here. So, you're welcome. So, in this podcast, we'll have the cast update, Wicked News and Media.
And we will also have our exclusive interview with current Broadway Elphaba Standby, Donna Vivino, who will finish her run as Elphaba Standby this Sunday, November 3rd. And now to Jonathan for the cast update.
Hello, listeners. Jonathan here with this week's cast update. On Broadway, Lindsay Wood has left the company. Jonathan Warren has returned to the company as a swing, dance captain, and understudy for Chistery. On the First National Tour, Tom Flynn has replaced Judd Williford as Dr. Dillamond. Raymond Joel Matsumura has replaced Ben Suzak as Chistery. On the UK-Ireland Tour, Michelle Pentecost temporarily served as a standby for Elphaba this past weekend. In the Mexico City Company, Paco Morales replaced Eugenio Montesoro as the wizard during previews. And now on to Isaac and this week's special guest Mark for Wicked News.
Hi listeners, this is Isaac here with our 10th anniversary contest winner Mark Phillips to do Wicked News for our 10th anniversary episode of the podcast. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good. I'm getting ready for all the fun wickedness tomorrow. Yep. For the anniversary, I'm seeing it here in Chicago, so it's going to be fun.
So is Shira, actually. So one of our staff members will be there. Shira will be there. So you try to meet her. Didn't you do the intro with her yesterday?
Yeah, and I ran into her when I was up here in Milwaukee, so it'll be kind of fun to reconnect with her, and I think we're going to try and do a few of the lottos while it's down there.
That's great. That is absolutely fantastic. I live in South Alabama, and so I'm student teaching right now. And so the only thing I think I'll be doing is wearing green, but I will definitely wear green tomorrow, just because, you know, represent.
You'll be there in spirit with everybody.
Exactly. All right, so let's get started. David Garrison will perform in Oliver at Paper Mill Playhouse in the role of Fagin. The production runs from November 21st through December 29th. So, yeah, I haven't seen him in anything, actually. I really kind of wish I'd seen him as the Wizard. He did it for a long time. Did you ever see him in the show, Mark?
No, I don't think I see him in it.
Yeah, I mean, he did it a while ago, I know, but I heard he was really good, so.
If I did, I might not have noticed. Sometimes especially earlier on when I was seeing the show, I didn't pay that much attention to who was in and out, so.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, Wicked has been celebrating its 10th anniversary recently with TV appearances this week. On Monday night, cast members read clues in a special Wicked-themed category of Jeopardy. This morning, Lindsay Mendez, Ally Mosby, and the cast performed on The Today Show. And tomorrow, Lindsay and Ally will perform For Good on The Katie Couric Show. Right. So I actually got a chance to catch the one on Jeopardy, and it was pretty neat to see some of the characters kind of on, you know, HGTV and really appreciate some of the scenery and the sets as opposed to seeing it from farther away in the audience.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm very bitter because I have Dish for my satellite and they are in a dispute with CBS down here.
Okay.
That's a national thing or if that's just a here thing. But in any case, they are in a dispute with CBS and so I will not be getting the Today Show. So I guess I'll just have to catch it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's kind of a tease. I'm really hoping that maybe for the 20th anniversary they do like a DVD like some of the other shows, but it's kind of a tease seeing all the sets and the costumes on there, and it just really makes me want to see like a DVD production. I think that'd be really neat.
You know, I have said for years though that Wicked's one of those. I feel like with Wicked, whenever they do a movie, they're either going to need to do it animated or they'll just need to film the show because you can't. I don't feel like this show it will be very easy to do as like a movie with all these crazy special effects. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because some of it might look cheesy. Versus what's, you know, majestic on stage, like her flight, for example. You know, people fly in TV shows all the time, so we see.
Right.
That's nothing special.
I'd be satisfied with just the stage version.
Yeah, I would too, totally, completely. Christopher Fitzgerald joined the company of Chicago on Broadway on Monday night, taking over the role of Amos Hart. Yeah, it's a really great role, you know, good male theater role. Mr. Cellophane gets to sing that, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's really exciting for him. It's nice to see people from Wicked branching off and going on to different shows.
Yeah, it's always fun to kind of see alums do stuff. So we'll have to try and get him in for an interview, talk about doing Chicago.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, that's it for our short Wicked news this week. And now we head over to Ryan for media.
Hi, listeners. This is Ryan here, and welcome to this week's special edition of Media. We have a lot of 10th anniversary news to talk about, and we will also have some media from the second national tour's stop in Kansas City. Let's start off with those articles. The first article that we have is from the Kansas City Star, and it's an interview with Haley Pachin. And in the interview, Haley talks about the beginning of her career as an actress. Her first professional job was in 1998 in the revival of The Sound of Music. She was originally hired as an understudy and was later offered two different roles. When the show closed 2 days before her birthday, the reality of being a performer hit her. "You have a job one day and then the next you don't," says Haley. For the next couple of years, she was looking for any jobs that she could to stay in the entertainment industry. When she graduated from high school, she was booked in the national tour of Hairspray and never looked back. Since then, she has worked on the revivals of Sunday in the Park with George, Pal Joey, Anything Goes, and the new musical Chaplin. In Wicked, they wanted her to bring her own personality to the role. "I get to use my own little quirks, my own comedy. I don't have to be someone else. I get to be the weird self that I am at home with my friends. Her arc is really fun because she starts off so innocent and wide-eyed, and then things change and she grows into this lady," says Haley. Be sure to check out the full article on our website. The next video that we have is from Fox 4 News. The first clip is of Haley talking about how she feels to be back at home.
"Welcome home.
Thanks.
First of all,
I'm so happy to be home.
How exciting is it to perform in your hometown?
It's really neat. I get to see people that I haven't seen or talked with in a really long time at the stage door after the show, and especially people that wouldn't get to come to New York and see me. It's great for them to see what I've been doing the past 8 or 10 years that I've been gone.
And Union Station has even honored you by turning the building green."
"Yeah, they made it green for us. It's really neat.
You're kind of a big deal around here.
Oh gosh, it made me blush."
She then goes on to talk about how she got into the business and how she got the role of Glinda.
"So I started working professionally here in Kansas City when I was about 10 years old. And then I made my Broadway debut at 12.
12
years old. Little kid in New York. I loved it. And then I've just been lucky enough to keep working consistently ever since then.
And your parents, right over
They're
here.
They're in studio, yeah.
And I'm sure they are so incredibly proud
Yeah,
of you.
I feel like this is more their special treat for them than for me. It's just like doing work. So this
is
really
special. It's your
special.
Job. You're just doing your
I'm
job.
Just doing my job.
Okay, tell me how the role of Wicked came about. How, you know, how did you prep to try to get this role? I'm sure it was, you know, a very popular role that a lot of women wanted.
Yes. Well, myself included, I saw the show 10 years ago in New York, original cast, front row, and I was like, I have to play this role. And I've been auditioning for Glinda for the past 6 years, on and off, so to finally get to be playing the role 8 times a week is a dream come true.
Now, why Glinda over Elphaba?
Well, I like glitter and pink and girly things, so it just fits my personality a little more.
Yeah, I can see your nails are
Yeah, beautiful. They're glitter, yeah. Thanks.
Sparkly.
Next, she talks about some interesting rituals and warm-ups that she does to get ready for the show.
Now, how do you prepare for this role? Like, do you have any rituals that you do before the show at all?
I like to run in between all the aisles of each theater that I go to. It kind of warms my body up. It's a little tradition with a friend of mine from New York. So that kind of warms my body up. I do vocal exercises, sometimes some tea. But then I just chat with my castmates before the show to check in how our days were, and we make each other laugh.
In the last part of the interview, she does a little toss-toss tutorial, so make sure that you go on our website to check out that video. Our next video is from KCTV, and it's another interview with Haley. She talks about how she auditioned for Wicked over the course of 6 years and didn't stop until she got it. In the interview, they also talk to her dance teacher, Shirley Marley, and they also have clips of her in high school when she was in Anything Goes singing Heaven Hop.
Pachoon is a natural performer. That's her way back when, the little blonde with a big belting voice. Growing up, Miller Marley School of Dance and Voice was a second home. Her teachers here like family. Shirley Marley remembers Pachoon always stood out.
Oh, she was a live wire, always a little sprite, always so happy and dancing in the door. And that's kind of unusual. You know, she's very special.
Her natural showmanship and endless hard work landed her a role on Broadway when she was just 12. She's never looked back, but will never forget how she made it and landed her dream role.
Coming home with everyone here that's trained me has been really awesome. You know, I wouldn't be where I am today without all the people that I've worked for here in Kansas City.
Make sure to check out our website for the rest of that video, and also check out the other articles from the Kansas City Stop on our media section. And now for some special 10th anniversary news. This week, Wicked will be celebrating its 10th anniversary on Broadway. In preparation, the show will be featured on 3 television programs leading up to the anniversary. On Monday, October 28th, Jeopardy! Will be hosting a special Wicked category with special video clues from cast members. On Wednesday, October 30th, Lindsay Mendez will perform The Wizard and I, and she will be joined by Ali Mazzi and perform What Is This Feeling on The Today Show. On October 31st, Lindsay and Ali will perform For Good on The Katie Couric Show. Last week, Wicked posted a video on their YouTube channel with a special look back at the past 10 years of the show. The interview has many members of the production team, including Stephen Schwartz, Winnie Holzman, Mark Platt, David Stone, Joe Mantello, and many more. In addition, there are many past cast members sharing their experiences and reflecting on how the show has changed them. Some past cast members include Eden Espinosa, Annalee Ashford, Idina Menzel, Ali Mazzi, Sean McCourt, Michael Wartella, PJ Benjamin, Rondé Reed, Willemijn Verkijk, William Yeomans, Derek Williams, Tiffany Haas, David Garrison, Ben Cameron, and many more. Be sure to check that video out. It's on our website. Time Out New York tracked down the 15 ladies who performed the leading role of Elphaba on Broadway. Each actress was asked a couple of questions pertaining to their time in the show, and each had some very interesting answers. Idina Menzel was asked, "What was your best Wicked gift, fan gift?" Her response was a green bowling ball and the Margaret Hamilton's Real Wizard of Oz gloves. Shoshana Bean was asked, "You replaced Idina Menzel. What was your approach to the role?" Her response was, "In the beginning, it was daunting for me. I was so overwhelmed. I replaced Idina, so I really thought I was safe to emulate what I'd seen. It was safe and it was working. Let's not reinvent the wheel. But at some point, it just doesn't work. It's not authentic and it doesn't land. And I remember director Joe Mantello asking me, when are you going to make this your own? That's the best gift that any actress can bring to the role, which is to be exactly who they are. No one else can do it. I just drew on myself, and I brought my life on stage every night. Do I know what it's like to be green or fly? No. But I have other things that I struggle with and I can bring to the table. I just made it as personable as possible. To me, that creates a very authentic and moving experience for an audience. Eden Espinosa was asked, do you have a favorite span of time that you played in? Her response was, probably right in the beginning. I was in the original company, and that was a very new experience for me. And then also when I closed the LA company, Megan Hilty and I, who opened that company, came back to close it at the end. I think I felt that at that point, it was a complete maturation for me as a woman and my outlook on Elphaba. Anna Gasteyer was asked, you've spent a good portion of your career doing comedy. Why did you decide to tackle a dramatic role like Elphaba? Her response was, I never really think about a role as dramatic or comedic. I just want to play it if it resonates, and Elphaba is very, very familiar to me. She is academic, funny, misunderstood, vulnerable, and acerbic. Characteristics of great comic roles, yes, but far more comprehensive when explored from a darker angle. Likewise, musically, the comic take on an Elphaba would live in a really simple place. But Elphaba's music in Wicked is well-rounded, so there's ample opportunity to express all her sides without just singing some crazy one-note musical veneer. Julie Marnie was asked what her favorite song to sing was, and her response was No Good Deed, and there's two reasons. A, Elphaba is a grown woman and decides to stop apologizing, which makes her more powerful than ever, which is fun to take on. And B, it's the last big one in the show, so it's a sort of home stretch song. You can't exhale yet, but you're closer. Stephanie J. Block asked, which part of you is in the character? And her response was, I always really connected deeply and heavily to I'm not that girl. It goes back to me being an insecure 12-year-old girl and looking into the mirror going, I don't look like anyone else. I did a lot of workshops and early readings and ended up not being chosen for the part, which was devastating. And so when I finally did that role, it was such a beautiful place to be. Stephen Schwartz said to me, the way you connect with that song, it really goes beyond what's on the page. Carrie Ellis was asked, how has Wicked changed your career? And her response was, it took me to Broadway, led me to my first album release and solo tour, and brought me a loyal fan base that support me now in everything I do. I couldn't have asked for more from a show. It was magical, challenging, heartbreaking at times, but one of the best journeys of my life, and I thank the show and all involved for the experience that has hugely influenced my life. Marcy Dodd was asked, you've played both Elphaba and Nessa Rose. Was it difficult playing siblings? Her response was, I did have a few nervous moments thinking I would say the other sister's line if I wasn't paying attention. Of course, that was quickly resolved with many, many run-throughs of the scenes. I love being able to play both perspectives. On one hand, you have a girl that society would see as beautiful on the outside, but who was truly tortured on the inside. Then you have Elphaba, who was an outcast because of her appearance, but emanated beauty from within. Both feel alone in their skin and are passionate in their pursuits. But I think that is where their similarities end. Nicole Parker was asked which Fierro is the best kisser. Her response was, oh boy, I can't believe you're actually asking me this. I can't answer it because my husband got so upset that I had to kiss so many Fierros. It was basically an issue every night. I blame Wicked for causing a slightly tumultuous moment in my marriage. No comment. For the sake of my marriage, no comment. Wait, my husband just said in the background, whatever, it's Aaron Tveit. Next, Dia Rossioli was asked, has any Elphaba influenced your performance? And her response was, I haven't seen many Elphabas, but I've loved the ones I've seen. Jackie Burns is so effortless, and Teal Wicks has this cool hippie take. But I think the one that influenced me the most is Stephanie J. Block. She is a huge risk taker, and nothing is off limits. I needed to see how far I could push Elfie, and I learned that from her. Mandy Gonzalez was asked, "Do you have any tips for removing the green makeup?" And her response was, "I would remove the green makeup by washing my face with Neutrogena after the show and using a washcloth around my hairline to really scrub it out. I had a faded green tint around my hairline for about 3 months after leaving the show. Also, if you have light-colored sheets, definitely change your pillowcase to something darker, or eventually they will turn green. Elphaba definitely stayed with me." Teal Wicks was asked, "Were there any memorable technical glitches?" Her response was, "I feel like we had a lot. There have been shows where the defying gravity flight mechanism didn't work, so I basically didn't fly and had to run down to the edge of the stage and sing. And then there was my suitcase." At the beginning of the show, Elphaba has a suitcase in her hand when she runs on stage for the first time. It's a prop that's there throughout her first number. I had a show where, right before I run downstage, one of the handles of the suitcase breaks, and then the door opens, and I start running, and the handle breaks completely. And the suitcase flies away from me and down the stage, heading straight towards our musical director. Luckily, it had stopped before reaching him. So that was my entrance, a flying suitcase. That actually happened to me twice. I don't know why it is, but that's my signature thing. I break suitcases. Jackie Burns was asked, "What was your memorable moment with a Wicked fan?" Her response was, "That's a tough one because there have been so many amazing fan moments. But the most recent thing was at the end of my run on Broadway. I got really sick and the fans from all over the world made this amazing Get Well video that was so touching and beautiful." Vilmen Verkijk was asked, "Do you prefer to perform Wicked in German, Dutch, or English?" Her response was, "That's not easy to answer. German was the language that started my Elphaba career, so it's very special to me. Dutch is my mother language, so that really felt like I was bringing Elphaba closer to me. But singing in Dutch is much more difficult than German. The Dutch throat sound makes it sometimes harder. Then I got the chance to play the role on Broadway in its original language. Of course, that made everything fall into place." Lindsay Mendez was asked, "What's your favorite moment in the show?" Her response was, "I love the scene at the dance when Elphaba and Glinda really connect and they dance together. I think that's just a beautifully done moment. I look forward to doing it every night. And it's so cool that on a big stage and a big theater, you can have those moments. In a show that's also has flying monkeys and she's green, there's nothing subtle about that. I love the small moments that are heartfelt and moving. It's what made me want to be an actor." So those are a couple of the questions that the actresses were answered. Of course, they were asked many more questions, so please go out onto our website and check out the entire article. It's an interesting read. So that does it for this week's special edition of Media, and now we'll head over to a special interview with Isaac and Austin.
Hi, listeners. This is Isaac, and Austin and I are here today with our special 10th anniversary guest, Donna Vivino. As you probably
Hello.
Know...
Hello.
Hi, Donna. As you probably
Hi.
Know, Donna is currently the standby for Elphaba in the Broadway production of Wicked. Previously, she stood by for and performed the role in the first national tour and has also performed on Broadway and on tour with Hairspray and with several other shows. I'm not even going to attempt to list them out. She's also the original Young Cosette in Les Miserables on Broadway, so you've got quite an extensive list of credits. How are you doing, Donna?
I'm good. It's a beautiful fall day in New York today, so
it's so
been
nice.
A lovely day.
Tell us a little bit about yourself as a person, besides being a performer.
As a person, you said?
Yes.
Oh, well, I actually grew up right outside of New York City in New Jersey. I recently moved back to New York about a month ago. I'm adopting a kitten. I'm taking her home on Monday, so I'm very excited about that. She's a black kitty, so it's kind of, I guess, fitting for me as a witch. I have my black cat. My family lives pretty close by. Part of my family is here in New Jersey, and then my other family's in Los Angeles. So I spend a lot of time on both coasts. And love New York and L.A., and I love this country. I've been to 46 states, not just because of a kid, but I've seen this country a lot, so... touring
wow.
definitely. Yeah, I'm a big traveler, so tour was fun in that regard for me, you know.
That is awesome. So what four have you not been to, just out of curiosity?
What have I not? Okay. Alaska.
Figured.
New Mexico. North Dakota. And Vermont, which is really close by, but I'm going to wait until I'm like 87 and then go there as my last date.
That's awesome.
Just, you know, yeah.
Wow. So how did you get the bug to perform, per se? Like, what got you into it?
I was singing and performing since I was about two years old. I actually just did a solo show at 54 Below, and it kind of was about my life as a child actor. I mean, I was two when I was performing, so it just sort of happened then. And then I, from like when I was probably 13 years old until I was about 21, I was just a normal teenager, and I didn't want to do show business anymore, and I went to college not for this. I was really interested in neuroscience and law and all those things. I was a real, like, and I still am kind of a bit of a nerd in a good way. So I love learning in school and books and things like that. So,
I mean, you're talking to two teachers, so I guess that's kind of a fitting.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, my brother and his wife are teachers. So yeah.
Yeah, I teach science, and Austin is doing English. So, Yep. I guess it's a phone call with three nerds. But
all right, I love it. Like that. That's right.
So what
it's
was
good.
What was your undergrad in then, Donna? What was the degree?
I went to Barnard College at Columbia University, which is here in the city.
Uh-huh.
I studied English literature. I was minoring in biopsychology, which is sort of like a precursor to neuroscience.
Wow.
And when I studied English, I did do a semester abroad at BADA, the British Academy of Dramatic Arts, where I studied Shakespeare. I studied acting Shakespeare, but it was really only to sort of inform my English degree and my English literature degree. I love Shakespeare. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
That's really fascinating. That's awesome.
It was fun. It was a good time. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Les Mis. Is that how you got your equity card?
It was how I got my equity card. It was Les Mis. I was eight years old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just what was it like?
And so how did
you know, I think it's interesting when you are that young and you're doing something of that magnitude, you don't know what the big deal it is. You know, the hindsight's 20/20, youth is wasted on the young. All that is true because I just loved performing, was having fun. Looking back now, I'm like, wow, that was a huge thing to be a part of, but you're just doing it. You're a kid. So what was it like? It was like I would go to school, and then at night I would play more, and then do it again the next day. So
how did landing the role come about?
In Les Mis?
Yes.
Well, I had been doing lots of commercials and film and television. I've always been an actress who sang. Singing was always there. It was something I could always do, but it really wasn't what I did as a child actor until this audition came up for Les Mis, and I went in and I sang a song, and then that was it. And then 7 months later, they must have just been doing preliminaries then. They had seen, I think it was something like anywhere between 700 and 800 girls, maybe more. I don't really know the figure specifically, but it was a lot of girls for Young Cosette. And then I got a call back, and I went in, and that's when I learned Cast on the Cloud and sang that. And then I got another call back, and then I got the part. And it was like, whoa, cool.
Wow. That is
awesome.
And so mm-hmm. if you could pick any role in Les Mis to do now, what role would it be?
I love Fontaine, although I love something. It would definitely be Fontaine. Reading the novel, I find her to be the most interesting character. Her story is just heartbreaking. It's tragic.
True.
And so fleshed out beautifully in the novel. Yeah, she's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, I loved, just a side note on that, I loved it in the movie that they actually added back in the little part where, I think it was in the novel where they took her tooth out, like her golden teeth.
Yes,
and
that's right.
That's just so, like, heart-wrenching, but I think it was a very smart decision to put it back into the movie just because it really is just, I think it kind of adds to the pain of that scene, you know?
Right.
It's pretty gruesome, yeah, what she goes through, and yeah, it is heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm.
So even though you had like a normal elementary, middle, and high school after Les Mis, did you still continue performing like in your spare time or?
I totally did my high school shows, absolutely. We had a really great, I was a public school in New Jersey, but we had a wonderful teacher named John Giurisi, who is still there doing the musicals. We had beautiful, wonderful musicals at my high school. I did End Plays, which was a separate teacher doing that, but they were all really great. I started all of my work with improv when I was 14 years old through my high school. It was not a performing arts high school, but we just had great teachers. We didn't have a huge program for that. We just had people that were so passionate and teachers that were so passionate about doing that. It was building our own sets as well. It was really wonderful. I really feel like I got great training in high school. He actually, my high school teacher just emailed me yesterday to say that he has converted, I haven't even seen it, he had VHS tapes of all the musicals that I was in, that we all were in, but that I was in, and he's converted them all to DVD, and he's going to send them to me. There's a couple YouTube links of me and My Girl when I was a senior in high school doing a terrible Cockney accent, but singing that show. And what's cool about Me and My Girl, which was my senior year of high school, was that that was the first Broadway show that I think I had seen one other Broadway show before that, but that was the first Broadway show that I saw live that I was like, oh, I want to do that, you know? And I was probably about 7 years old, and then a year later I was doing it, which is kind of crazy, but that's how it happened. So.
That is awesome. So tell us a little bit about Hairspray. Like, how did that booking come about? Was it just like a standard audition process?
Before Hairspray, there was Saturday Night Fever, and that happened when I was in college. I was an RA. It was a random thing where I had gotten an audition when I was about, there was this movie called Camp that was happening, and they were looking for,
love that movie.
You know, yeah. And they were looking for people for that film. And, you know, Telsey Casting was having open calls everywhere, and they were going to different colleges, and I was right there in the city, and I went to a call for Camp and did really well, got right to the end, didn't get it, but, you know, was like, eh, whatever. And then they called me 2 years later and said, oh, you know, we're having auditions for this show, Saturday Night Fever. Do you play any instruments also? And I do play piano. So they were looking for people that were going to be pit singers that were going to sing and play and cover some roles on stage. So I went to that call, and they took three girls and three guys to be in the pit, and I was in it. So I would go to classes during the day and then sing in the pit at night and then go back. I graduated. I did one of the shows, you know, in the pit in my cap and gown, which was really funny, when I graduated. And I was also an RA, I felt badly. I actually stopped being an RA halfway through my senior year. I had to, because I just wasn't there for the residents enough at night. It just wasn't right because I was doing the show. So that was kind of cool. So then that ended, and I waited tables for 2 years. And during that time, after doing the Broadway show, you know, I waited tables for 2 years. My only real connection at that time was through Telsey Casting, I had gone in about 14 times for Hairspray. The dancing was really hard for me. I just wasn't picking it up as fast as everybody else. So by the time I got to call 14, I think I was better. and I was up for the Broadway production, and then I got the first national tour. We were the original company, the first national tour, which was pretty miraculous because I got to work for a whole month with Jack O'Brien and Jerry Mitchell, and we built our version, we built our production, I should say, of Hairspray from the ground up and toured the country with it, and that was a wonderful experience, and it was a wonderful cast, and it's something I will never forget. And I did it with Ali Mazzi, too, who was also one of the dancers in the ensemble with me. Yeah, so it's really fun to go on with her, you know, when I'm on. Opposite her.
Wow, that's awesome. So, and you covered Tracy and Velma, correct?
I covered, the truth is that I really, there was a standby for Tracy, there was a standby for Velma and the female authority figure, which is the character-y older women roles, Velma and the female authority figure. So there's standbys for both of those parts. So then they have to have, like, you have to legally have two covers for every role. So instead of hiring somebody else who's appropriate for Tracy or the older women, it's like, well, who in the ensemble, if there was an emergency, could pull it off? So they gave me a padded suit for when I was going to be on as Tracy, and they, you know, tried to make me look as old as possible for the other roles. I was constantly reading rehearsals, even though I went on for Tracy twice in all of that time. And then I never went on for Velma, ever. And on Broadway, because I went to Hairspray on Broadway eventually, I went on for the female authority figure constantly, which was crazy. They were just constantly, those women were either sick or had to take leaves of absence. And so I was on for weeks at a time, which was so much fun because I love sketch comedy, and that it's a lot of improv. That part is a lot of improv. It's not scripted. So that was fine for me. And that's the one role too, where she doesn't have to be older. You know, Velma is, I was only 26 doing that stuff. But I never went on for Velma, and Tracy, I only did twice. I didn't like doing Tracy. I think it's really hard. I think it's a really hard part. And I think it was sort of fun, but it was one of the most challenging things I've ever done. It's just, I'm a little darker than her, I have more of an edge. And so to be that positive and optimistic, I mean, she's really a Glinda. Tracy Turnblad is a Glinda in a different shell. And so, not that I couldn't, do it. Of course, you're an actress and you do it, but it was much more work for me to access that type of character who is just so bright and sunny and bouncing off the walls. Plus, I was in a padded suit, and it was harder to maneuver, and I felt like a turtle because I just did, So.
Oh, that's funny.
How long were you with Hairspray?
I did Hairspray for 11 months on tour, and then I left and moved to San Francisco because when I was in San Francisco on tour, I fell in love with that city, and felt that I needed to stay. And so I put my notice in after we did LA and moved back to San Francisco. I was doing local theater there, and then also moved down to LA after was going back and forth between LA and San Francisco for work. And I'd say about a year after I left the tour, they called and asked me if I wanted to come to New York and do my track on Broadway. And the very first thing I ever did in the Broadway company of Hairspray, it's kind of a crazy story because on tour, I only covered Velma and Tracy, but when I was going to the Broadway company, and I got this phone call, and they said, hey, I was in LA, and they said, this is your stage manager, and you're going to be coming. And I said, okay, it was a welcome call. And he said, yeah, are you, in New York right now? And I said, no, I'm in LA. Why? And he said, how soon can you get here? And I said, do I need to start learning my track on Broadway? And he said, well, I need you to learn female authority figure. I said, oh, okay. And he goes, we're having coverage issues. And I said, all right. I said, well, if you guys can fly me out tomorrow, I will. I said, am I covering that? And he said, well, if you can, we need you to. So I said, well, I did do the show and I kind of remember it and I'll try. And he said, you probably won't go on. We have a girl playing it right now. We just don't have any covers in the building. So we want you to learn it, just as an insurance policy, and we'll get you on contract for that. So I flew out the next day and then stayed at my mother's house that night in New Jersey. And then that Wednesday morning went to the rehearsal hall and was there with, didn't even have costumes for it yet. And we were learning it. And he was like, the chances of you going on are so slim. We just need you for the rest of this week. And by the end of that rehearsal, they had gotten a call that the girl who had been playing it was very sick suddenly and actually couldn't go on. So I went on that night. I sat at 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock that night. I never even did a meet and greet with the company because there was no time. So I went on and they put together some costumes. We took shoes that I owned, which, they have to pay you through Equity. If they make you use your own stuff, it's it's a lot of money, but they had to because they could find costume pieces that fit me that would work, but they couldn't find shoes that worked. You got to be in comfortable shoes on stage that you can walk around in. And I did it. I don't even remember. It was but that was my intro into the Broadway company. And I was golden after that because it was sort of I felt great after that because I felt like I can do anything now.
So it was talk about trial by fire.
It was awesome. And the company was so supportive. And then I was on for that all the time, despite the fact they had a standby. When there's a standby for something and then there's another cover, you don't go on a lot.
Right.
And I went on twice for Tracy only because I was leaving the show to go do Martin Short, to play opposite Martin Short in his show. And my stage manager came up to me and she said, you know, you're leaving in a few weeks. Do you want to go on for Tracy? And I said, nope, I'm okay. I'm in school. No. And she said, well, you know, Shannon's going on vacation for a week and you've just been working on this role for years and I think you're really good and you go to all the rehearsals and I'd like to give you two shows. You know, I'll give you the Sunday, both shows, if you want to do it. And I said, all right, I guess so. And the magical thing is that the link Larkin that day was a good friend of mine, Tyler Haynes, and Andrew Rannells. Andrew was playing the role, and that afternoon I was on with Andrew, and then that evening Andrew was out sick, and I got to go on with Tyler, which was it was Tyler's last show with Hairspray as well. And the magical thing about that is Tyler and I had been doing all of our rehearsals together, so that was a really special thing too. Mm-hmm. There were just a lot of wonderful, magical things that happened with Hairspray, you know?
That's really cool.
So, yeah.
Well, before we get into Wicked, you've done a lot of regional theater. Are there any experiences for that stand out as like a favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to gloss over Martin Short's Jane Becomes Me because that really was actually the most favorite thing I've ever done, ever in my career. It was a six-person cast. Was it six? Yes. Martin Short and five other people. I didn't have an audition for it. I heard about it and emailed Mark Sheen and anyone who would listen until they would give me an audition. And it was like, okay, honey, you know, we're auditioning people who are on SNL and who are in Mad TV and you're probably not going to get it. And I did. And I'm just very proud of that. And I just want everybody to know that sometimes you have to, if you really know you're right for something and you believe in it, you've got to keep going for it. And so that was the best experience. It was only 3 months. I wasn't able to do Legally Blonde because of it. I had been doing workshops for that show for years. So it was heartbreaking in that sense too, because I had to make a choice. But to work opposite Martin Short, it was a dream come true. And so I want to talk about that. So before we get into Wicked, that has been, for me, was just unbelievable experience. Learned so much, played so many different celebrities and characters, and Martin Short is a genius. And that was amazing. Regionally, I'm trying to think. I really liked working at the Muni in St. Louis. It's a great place to work. It's 12,000 seat outdoor theater. I did Grease there. Grease is not my favorite show to see, but it's a real blast to do. And that production of Grease was me. Christine Reese was in it. Meggie Kanzler was in it. Kevin Kern was in it. Christy Cates, did I say her? She was in it. There might have been a couple. Billy Ty. It wound up being a cast of people that all went on to do Wicked. Christy was the only one who had already done Wicked. So the joke is that whatever happened, at the Muni, at Grease, it was like we all just went to Wicked after that. It was kind of cool. So that was just a big blast. I mean, Muni is great because you only have 10 days, maybe less, to learn the show, and then you're up, you're gone, you're going, and you only do the show for 2 weeks, and then you're out of there, and it's so fun. It's outdoor theater. 12,000 seats. Yeah.
That is just
wow.
So much fun.
It was great. Yeah.
And now in Legally Blonde, you were the original Enid in the workshops and everything, correct?
In the workshops I was, and then Natalie Joy Johnson made her Broadway debut playing Enid, and she was phenomenal. And that's the thing that sometimes you have to make decisions, and when it rains, it pours. That can be such a heartbreaking, challenging thing. And and I just love show. I love Legally Blonde. I thought it was magical and wonderful. And I went to the opening of the tour and saw it with Becky, who was in Hairspray. And it was just great to be able to see that. And Natalie was awesome. And she made, I remember she always was like, I made my Broadway debut because you dropped out. That's how it works sometimes. So everybody wins.
Right. So tell us a little bit about your audition process for Wicked, because everybody it seems to be pretty different.
Wicked was pretty fascinating because I always knew I wanted to be in Wicked. I wanted to do that show. I wanted to be Elspeth. I knew I understood her character. I saw Idina do it. I said, I'm nothing like Idina Menzel, but I'm so much like Elspeth. I understand her. So it was like this thing where I really wanted to. And, my agents would constantly ask, they're like, no, she's not right for it. She's not right for it. No, she's more of a Glinda. She's shorter and blonde and curly hair and I don't see it. We don't see it. And I would say, I'm not a Glinda. I'm not a Glinda. I'm an Elspeth. yeah, I could do a version of Glinda, but that's not me. It's not, I don't feel that. So when I was doing Martin Short, there was two things happened. The associate director on that show was the associate over at Wicked as well. And one day during rehearsal, I said, Paul, you know, I would love to come to an audition for Wicked when I'm done with this show. And he said, oh, you'd be a great Glinda. And I said, no, I'm an Elspeth. And he sort of laughed. But in Martin Short, there was this part of the show where we spoof Wicked, and I spoofed Elspeth and not Glinda. And he saw me do that, and he said, whoa, you did that really well. And I said, yeah, I'm making fun of it, but I get it. And so I wound up getting a phone call. I'd come back from the Muni, and it was August. It was an August day. I was in Central Park, and I got a call from my agent saying, hey, you have an audition for Wicked. And I said, oh, my gosh, that's so cool. And he said, yeah. He said, listen, you know, they're auditioning people. They're looking for a bunch of different Elphabas, you know, standbys, understudies, and the role in many places. They're basically auditioning most of the standbys and understudies in all the companies right now. There's a couple people they're letting come in. I'm giving you the Elphaba packet. I just want you to get your foot in the door. People usually have to audition multiple times. And they might actually even say, can you come back and do Glinda? Like, just, you know, and I just said, you know what? I'm just so psyched to go in. I don't care what happens. I just want to go have fun with this because the opportunity to audition is great. So I showed up. I love morning auditions. I love singing in the morning, and I love being one of the first people to audition. I just do. And so I was there at like 10 or 11 in the morning. I went in. It was just, two people were there, was Lisa Leguio and Stephen Arimus. I went in, I sang, I did a scene. They said, okay, can you wait outside? I waited outside. They called me back in the room. They said, okay, you're getting a call back. We just want to, like, give you some notes and things. And I worked with them a little bit. And I said, great, thank you. And then as I was leaving, the casting director said to me, okay, so come back at 5:15 today. And I said, the callback is today? And he said, yes, come back at 5:15. So I come back at 5:15, and everybody and their mother is there. I mean, Carmen Cusack is sitting there, and Casey Levy, and a whole bunch of people. And the Glindas and Elphaba too, but they're all already in the Wicked family. And they're Marcy Dodd, everyone. And there I'm sitting, and Katie Rose Clark, and we're the only two that had ever done Wicked before. And I went in, and I did my thing, and when I walked in the room, there were about, everyone was there. Stephen Schwartz, Joe Mantello. I couldn't believe David Stone. I couldn't believe the entire creative team was there. And I thought, I'm at a final callback. And this morning I was holding the words to Wizard and I, and, you know, and getting notes on it. I can't believe this. So I just did what I did that morning. And 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from my agent saying that I was offered the standby for Elphaba on tour. And I screamed. I couldn't believe it. I said, are you kidding me? And he said, the next day they called to say, we are offering her an Elphaba position, either as, not in the ensemble, but we're offering her standby position. They didn't know which company because they were looking for one in LA as well, standby-wise. And my agent didn't want to tell me yet because he said sometimes things fall through and he didn't want me to be disappointed, which was very smart of him. And so when the offer became official, I was over the moon. I couldn't believe it. I honestly had the easiest Wicked audition, an easiest audition of my career with that. It was like just meant to be, I guess, truly. So it was cool. Yeah.
That is really great.
So and we all wound up getting placed somewhere, you know. We all did. I mean, Marcy went on to do it, and Casey, and, you know, everyone, Carmen, you know.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did standby for, it was about a year on tour, right?
I did standby for 9 months, and then I was going to leave. I was like, okay, I don't want to be on the road anymore. And then they asked me, they said, will you please stay for a few more months? And we'd like to offer you the role. I said, well, if you're offering me the role, then of course I'll stand by for a few more months. I took over for Carmen. I did it for 9 months. Then they asked me to stay another 9 months. I was on the fence about it only because I think the role is really challenging. I was really strong my first 9 months in terms of stamina. But, you know, I was feeling great. I was like, yeah, I can do it. And then I did the second 9 months, which was different. You know, it was good, but it was harder because, you know, touring is also more challenging and tiring. The schedule is much harder and you're changing climates and whatnot. So I definitely think that if I don't believe in regret, but if I were to do it again, I may have, it's hard to say no when you love playing Elphaba. It's hard to say no to keep doing it. So I am glad that I did it because I realized, hey, I can really do this for a long time. But if I had to do it again, I may have not done it for those last 9 months, only because my mother also doesn't fly, and I really missed her. You know, we are people, and we have lives, and I was starting to get a little homesick. I was getting a little homesick, but I had a blast on stage, and I always was true to her, to Elphaba. So that's good, I think.
Mm-hmm. So how did you come – this is kind of a question we ask pretty much all the Elphabas that do this. How did you come to make the acting and vocal choices that you make? Like, what were those, like, conscious decisions, or were they in-the-moment decisions? Like, oh, this is going to sound good, so I'm going to do this vocal thing, or I'm going to make this acting choice, or is everything you do, like, carefully thought out before the show? Like, how do you come to make those decisions?
I mean, it changes constantly. You know, my Elphaba has evolved because I've evolved as a human being. I always am just, I bring as much of myself to the character as I can, because I truly believe that, I mean, there's things obviously that are different than us, but there's only one you. I will never be Adina. I will never be, Villamine. I'll be me. There's only one of you. So for me, it was always important for me to just find what it is about Elphaba that I connect to. And then I worked from there. Costumes really help. It helps with physicality. Susan Hilferty is a genius. The way she designs certain things, you can only move a certain way. It's pretty fascinating. Mm-hmm. I am not someone that maps out every. I my Elphaba is probably always a little different depending on who I'm on with too. I'm very much from that vein. I'm just not an autopilot kind of person. Some people want to plan out every little thing and they do that and that's great. And I can't. That's just not my style, but there's pros and cons to all of that. But they're choices that are happening in the moment when I'm on the stage because of what I'm getting back. And then, of course, you're in a show that's been running for a long time. You're in a show that there are people that are going to give you notes and they're going to direct you. Yeah, do it more this way or that way. And so that helps too. So some things you're steered a certain way and then you try it and it works and you're like, yeah, and then you keep going with that, you know? So that's sort of been my journey with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I remember actually, that's funny you mentioned that, because I remember I actually saw you with Stephanie Brown and Chandra, and I remember there were pretty strong differences in the way you performed your material opposite each of them.
Yeah. I mean, the core of Elphaba will always be there. I think, of course, you know, you work on the material music, in terms of the songs, you work on the material musically and you'll figure out where things work in your voice and how you approach certain things. And then of course you practice that and then you forget about it when you're out there and you can just act and then your voice will just be there. So vocally, yeah, you got to do the work. You have to do the work for the acting, but you can only do it so much until you just get out there and then you have to play opposite your scene partner, you know?
Right.
And the audience. Audiences inform things too, and an audience is also an audience is also a member of the show. Theater is a living, breathing art, and there's a communication and sort of, you know, a relationship that develops between performers and the audience, and so that's great too, and that's what's also really great about tour, because you get different flavors in different cities. Like Salt Lake City, I remember my first time there, and I loved that city and I loved the people there. And I came off stage and I said, "This is not an Elphaba town. They really like Linda." it was that joke when I said blonde, and then you know people laughed. But then I thought, wait a minute, there are a lot of blonde people in Salt Lake City. I hope I'm not hurting anyone's feelings. But of course, you know, you just go with it. And I think that was my first, because I performed in the premiere of Salt Lake. The first time when we went to Salt Lake City, I was the first Elphaba there. And of course they loved Elphaba and Glinda, and they were totally into the story. But there was a different feeling coming back where I think she slapped me one day, and they applauded when she slapped me. And I remember thinking, you know what? It is pretty awful. what else was done, and it's pretty awful what I'm saying to her, and maybe I did deserve a little slap, you know. So it was funny to me in the moment. I was like, wow. And that's how much they were into the story. I don't care who they're siding with. They're into the story, so that's it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you've got to love different audiences. It's hilarious.
That is so awesome. So,
yeah.
And, you know, also kind of on that note, you're pretty well known among fans and supporters of the show as one that does a lot of really neat stuff with your voice, you know, like alternate notes and that kind of thing. Are there any particular favorites that you have you've come up with, or is it just kind of a...
No, I don't come up with alternate things. They come out of me sometimes. I'm really not a fan of changing the score. I the first year I played the role, I sang the score. Mm-hmm. I think to the letter, to every note. I sang the score on the page. Stephen Schwartz wrote a really hard and interesting score for a reason. It wasn't until I was going into my next contract as Elphaba that it was actually, they said, you know, you can free it up if you want, if it comes out of an emotional place. And so I stay pretty true. I still sometimes just go out there and sing the score, and I tell you, the audience is still enjoying the show. I don't have any favorites. I shy away from it, actually, if I can. Sometimes it just comes out, you know, if you're feeling that. But I don't plan them. I don't plan them, because then it's not... I come from an acting standpoint, and it's, you're not in the moment then. For me, it doesn't work. So, yeah. No Good Deed is for me, it's a song that it's so emotional that it's such a high point that it's just things will come out that you can't help it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's when it started for me, was with that song. It wasn't, but I was just like, and it's coming out that way because I want to sing, I need to sing this more because I'm so upset. That's sort of where it came from.
That is a really fantastic approach to it, too.
I think that's one. I mean, it's because it's so authentic, and I think that's probably part of why, like, your interpretation. I don't know. I just feel that your interpretation of the role really, really resounds. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that is a great answer to that question. So, having stood and performed full time as Elphaba for quite some time, what are the pros and cons of each? And do you prefer one over the other?
Oh, goodness. You know what? I at the end of the day, I love Elphaba so much. I'm leaving the show in a few weeks, and everyone keeps saying, like, oh, are you going to miss? And I'm like, of course I'm going to miss certain people, and I'm gonna miss the paycheck, but I can get another job working in my field and make some money. And I can also see people that I've worked with in Wicked. We can go have dinner and we can talk on the phone. I'm going to miss Elphaba. I sound so corny, but I really am. Like, I just love her. And I get, like, emotional thinking about Elphaba. I prefer playing the role. Of course. I love it. It is exhausting, like anything else. And so the cons can be that I find that the balance in my life, my social life, my you know, having a relationship with someone, or seeing your family, or, you know, going out and having a drink after a show, which, you know, I'm not even a drinker, but, you know, a big drinker or anything like that. But, you know, those things fall by the wayside, and you live and breathe the discipline of doing a role like this. I love doing that when I'm playing the role, but that is, I don't want to say it's a con, but it's a pro to not have to do that when I'm a standby. I think being a standby, the other great thing is that it forces a freshness that that you don't always get sometimes when you're doing it 8 times a week. I love going on mid-show. When it happens, it's one of the most exciting things. I love it, love it, love it. There's nothing like getting painted green in 7 minutes or less and getting thrown out on the stage and just going. Love it. So that's fun. Being a standby too, I've really gotten to watch the show and see it from a different perspective more. I don't watch that often, but I'll have rehearsals more often because, you know, not a lot, but I will have rehearsals more often, which is always great. So good to rehearse. It's fine new things. So that's that's great. But, I mean, I like playing the part every night because I love Elphaba, you know?
Right.
So, if I had to choose, I would definitely choose to play it. But I have really enjoyed the standby time. And I have a really beautiful relationship with Tiffany Haas, who's really become, I can count on one hand who my closest friends are, and she is one of them. And that it's been really a miracle to have her in my life and to spend time backstage with her every night when one of us isn't home. I get to hang out with my best friend backstage. Hello. That is so cool. So, yeah.
Awesome. And she's a sweetheart. I'm sure you two would be wonderful to do the role together. I can't imagine the chemistry you guys must have.
We got to go on 6 times together here in New York. The first time, it was a blur for both of us. You know, we were just like, this is really happening, so we didn't really remember it. The next 5 times, it was just unbelievable. And I always say that if I ever played the role full time again, oh, I would just love to do it with her. I really would.
That'd be awesome. So, well, it could be in the future. You never know. So.
Oh, you never know. Wicked is a big old revolving door in a wonderful way, and they take really good care of us, and they've been really, you know, it's great. I love working for them. I do.
Fantastic. Do you think then, I guess this you kind of just answered this, but I mean, maybe down the road, if given the opportunity, you think you might like to come back?
I would, if it's the right time and they still want it, but I also have to face the reality that, you know, in that I'm not that girl kind of way, I have to say, like, you know, that could happen, but you know what? It really probably won't or may not, or I don't know. I have to just resign myself to the fact that, you know, this job is over for me now and I'm moving on to something else, and it could be the last time. I felt that way when I left the tour. And then I was shocked when a year later they're like, hey, do you have any interest in standing by on Broadway? And I said, huh, standing by again. Well, it's Broadway. Let me think. Sure. So, you know, it's definitely always a possibility. I say this all the time when people say, are you going to be on tomorrow? I say, it's always a possibility, never a guarantee. So that's how I think about it.
That is awesome.
So speaking of leaving then, and because you mentioned departing the tour company, so what is, as a performer, what is the experience of a last show like, your last show in a company?
Well, my last show here, I'm probably going to be leaving, you know, an intermission because I probably won't be on, and it's going to be very just chill. It's not going to be like a big old thing. A last show on tour is usually more emotional because people are not only just leaving a show, but they're leaving like we're a big family living together. So you're sort of leaving like the nest and going out on your own or going back, you know, it's like, or leaving college, you know, or whatever, graduating high school. So it has a much more emotionally charged feeling. I've left shows on Broadway before. It's different. It's just different. And I've never left a show as a standby. So I'll have to get back to you in a couple of weeks on that. But I have a feeling it's going to be pretty chill because I probably won't be on, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Yeah.
That's just such a great approach and a way to look at that. So do you have any memorable or funny stories from performing, like bloopers? I mean, I know I was at the Power Outage show, which was one you were.
Oh, the Power Outage show wasn't that just a miracle? I mean, that was just lovely. I mean, it was horrible what happened, but it really was special. I mean, I'll never forget that. I've had shows where, I for some reason, whenever I've been on with Katie Rose Clark, like two of us, well, I've fallen down so many times during the fight scene, but only with Katie. And it's just so funny because my dress is very heavy. I don't know if some of the new Elphaba dresses are lighter, but I love the weight of it. It's like 20 pounds or something, maybe a little less, but it's heavy. And so when you fall down, it's actually hard to get up. it's hard to get up gracefully. Like in No Good Deed, we fall to the ground, but you're also getting up and it's not graceful. So that's okay. When you fall down and you're in the middle of a fight, it's funny, let's be honest. So there's that. Those are sort of, the Power Outage show in New Orleans was crazy. It was crazy, but fun.
That was a pretty funny experience.
Yeah, and then singing for good with no microphones and no light, but an acoustic piano on the stage and a stagehand holding flashlights on me and Chandra. That's a memory that I'll always have. And then leaving the theater with my green on but my regular hair and getting a picture with you and then deciding, you know what, I think I'll go out like this in New Orleans because you know, well, I didn't even really go out. I went home with it on. There was nowhere to shower, and the city was dark, you know, most of the city. So I just was like, I'm going home. I said, nobody batted an eye. It's New Orleans. So that was great.
that was hilarious. So, Donna, you just finished your show at 54 Below just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. How wonderful was that?
Oh, that was one of the happiest nights of my life. That was a wonderful, wonderful, that room was filled with so much love. And it wasn't just Wicked fans. It was people that I knew from high school and family and fans of jazz. I have a jazz album coming out with my dad at December 10th. Plug, yes. It's called Beautiful Dreamer. So I got to do some stuff from that. I'm doing the show again on January 8th, Wednesday at 9:30 p.m.
Awesome.
I'm going to be doing It's Not Easy Being Green again. Yep. It was a blast. It was really phenomenal and fantastic. And I never, for years, I mean, since I was in my early 20s, people have said, you really should do a one-woman show. And I said, I'm not going to do a show until I really just feel like it's the right time and that I feel like I have something to say. And I finally felt like it was the right time and I had something to say and an album to promote and whatnot. And it was cool because I spoke a lot about a lot of what I talked about on here, too, and sort of my journey from child actor to normal child to, you know, an adult in this industry and an adult, you know, being an artist as an adult. And what's funny is that I almost titled the show No More Brooms because in Les Mis I have a broom and in Wicked I have a broom. And and believe it or not, in Stars of David, which was a show that I did in Philadelphia last year, I took a leave of absence from Wicked to go do that in Philadelphia. There was a scene where I had a broom. So I don't know what it is, but brooms tend to just follow me everywhere in my career. So, yeah, I should probably use my broom more in my home, but anyway, I'm sick of them because I'm using them all the time on stage. No, I'm just kidding.
So speaking of stars, all right, we'll go back to that. But talking about the upcoming album, like what should we expect from that? That comes out in December, right?
That comes out December 10th. That was a labor of love. I was in Los Angeles. I took a week. I had taken some time off from Wicked to some vacation. We get vacations, and I took a vacation to visit my family in Los Angeles, and my grandmother passed away, hours after I had visited her. She was very ill, and my father and I decided to go into the studio and record some of the songs that she and my grandfather, he passed away while I was doing Wicked on tour when I was in Louisville, and it broke my heart. It really did. For Good was really hard to get. That was one of those nights where I was a professional, but For Good, I just started losing it during the number, and no one knew any wiser. I just knew that I was really sad. But anyhow, we decided to record a few songs with his jazz quartet. My father's a wonderful musician, and he's with the Conan O'Brien band out there. And so we recorded a few songs that, you know, my grandmother and grandfather had taught me and that we had grown up hearing. And then it just kind of became this thing where, like, I flew out on a Monday a few weeks later and did, you know, we did like five songs that first day, and I flew out and did like seven more. And then suddenly we're like, whoa, we have a record. So we did it really quickly. We recorded on 2 days. That was it. And it's stuff that I really love to sing. And it is not belty belty. We're talking standards and jazz and some unusual arrangements of a few Broadway tunes and standards and, just music that my dad and I love and that sort of have shaped me in terms of my relationship with my family. It's about family, that album. And it's called Beautiful Dreamer. That song was one of the first songs I ever learned. My grandmother, it's from the 1800s. My grandmother used to sing it to me when I was young. And it's also what I sang it for my Les Mis callback. So it's just a really a sweet song. And Submissions Only is coming out too, if I can plug that as well. That will be season 3 of Submissions Only. Will be premiering, I think, the end of this month or early November. I don't know if it's going to be on like a Netflix or a Hulu or what, but it's a wonderful web series about our industry. If you haven't seen it, seasons 1 and 2 are at submissionsonly.com. And season 3, I'm in every episode. It is a really fun character. I'm the other girl. I'm not the hero of this season, but that's all I'll say. But it's really great, and there's just some wonderful, wonderful people in that show. Lots of Kristen Chenoweth's been on it. You see a lot of Wicked faces too. Mm-hmm. So people should check that out.
It really is a fantastic show, and that's a cool venue for, you know, I think people that are used to performing on stage to actually get to do some film acting. Mm-hmm. And now it's been on YouTube in the past, so is that not the way it's going to go now? Is that what you were saying? It's going to be like Hulu or Netflix?
Well, I mean, if you want to watch, I didn't say that. If you want to watch seasons 1 and 2, they're on YouTube, I believe. Season 3, I don't know. I can't announce. I don't know actually what the platform is going to be. I don't know if it's going to be on a Netflix or a Hulu. I don't know if it's going to be on YouTube. I don't know how it's being released. They haven't even told us yet. But people should just look out for that. Yeah.
That's awesome. And guys, that really is a wonderful show. So listeners, be sure to check it out. And Donna plays Serena Maxwell, which is just such a great character. It's a really fun character.
She really is a great character. And you're going to see a lot more humanity in her this season, which I guess in a way is sort of similar to an Elphaba. You know, people say, oh, you're going to play the bad girl. You're going to play the diva or something. And then, of course, you know, as the season goes on, there's people say, oh, well, you know, she's a human being with diva qualities. So it was really fun. And I honestly, that's been the highlight of my year so far. Well, now the 54 Below show might have trumped that. I don't know. But, Filming Submissions Only actually has been the highlight of my year thus far. Kate Weatherhead and Andrew Keenan-Bolger are just unbelievable. And the writing, I'm just really grateful that I got to do that.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah. Since you're a pretty established social media guru, I guess we could say, with your hashtag DMV Musings on Twitter. Which shout out?
My initials to DMV, Donna Marie Vivino, which is why I have that. I have a friend named Isaac who, had said to me, because I was always writing Thought of the Day or something like that, and he said, hey, you should I love your musings. He said that to me when he said, I love your musings. And I said, what a funny way, because they are musings. I'm kind of amusing myself, but I'm also like, oh, wow, that's a little piece of inspiration that came to me, and it's like from a muse. And then, he said, you should say Donna's musings or something, but I just thought that was so, I don't know, Donna. And I said, well, my initials are DMV. So what I started was everyone thought that I was always at the Department of Motor Vehicles tweeting.
I totally
did. but I can't get rid of that hashtag now, you know.
I remember seeing that the first time and being like, oh, she's at the DMV. And then I saw it like 2 weeks later, and I was like, again, and then like a couple.
What's wrong with her car?
I was like, good night. I mean, does she wreck like I wreck? Because that's the thing. I wreck. And then finally, I realized. I looked at it. I was like, DMV. That's probably her initials. Hello.
No, everyone's made that mistake. It's kind of evil of me. I'm sorry.
It's really funny though. I love it, and they're good musings. So, since you're, such a social media person, as far as, with you have such a following on there, do you have anything to say about fan/supporter etiquette on social media? Any tips for people to make sure they don't step on toes?
I think that we're in a new age right now. We're all figuring it out. It's funny. It's also up to the person that's broadcasting. Like, if you're going to tweet and you're going to allow, sometimes I'll put something on Facebook that says, hey, all, because I only recently did I start accepting certain people on Facebook that some people I've never met or I've met at the stage door once or twice. And I've just basically, I'll put this up from time to time where I say, I really appreciate all the support and I'm happy to accept you on Facebook. But if you could please respect my friends and family, if they're on here, because I do this in good faith. And I do. I always am in good faith. I don't believe in being I'm not defensive when I interact with supporters or people that I don't know, because I don't think that helps anybody. But I definitely, I start out by giving everybody the benefit of the doubt that, hey, they just have liked either my musings on Twitter, or their submissions only supporter, and I never say fan, I always say supporter. I've been saying supporter more because that's really what it is. And so it's like, I appreciate that support, and I enjoy getting to know people. But nothing is really personal. I think that's the one thing that I'm going to say. Like, if I don't tweet someone back, or I ask someone, hey, do you mind taking down that comment? Or I don't answer a question. It is so not personal. It's either I've been really busy and I didn't see it, or I'm not going to answer the question, because if I answer it, I'm going to get in trouble with people that I work for, so I can't answer it. Or you know, just sometimes, you know, you can't always detect tone. Because in this day and age, we can't always detect tone, so things can get misconstrued. So I would just say that we all should just try not to take anything personally, because it really isn't personal, because most of us don't really know each other. You know, yeah. We know what we're showing out there, you know.
That's such a good point. That is such a good point about it.
Yeah.
That's just wonderful, wonderful thoughts and tips for people. So,
speaking of...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. So speaking of interactions with the supporters and fans, what have been some of your favorite or most memorable, the ones that impacted you the most?
Oh, okay. Well, there's this girl, her name is Ingrid Afgar, and she... there's so many, you know, she was making earrings and then I asked her if she would donate some for the flea market, and she did, and that was great. I've gotten to know a girl named Sophie who's in England, who's a beautiful, wonderful artist. That's the thing too. I love when I get to meet other talented people. there's a woman that does Michelle does these amazing dog drawings, and she's also a scientist. Like, how cool is that? That's what I love. That's what's memorable to me. I got a letter though, that I just have to mention this, from a father who sent me a letter. He's a lawyer, and it came from his law office. So I'm getting this letter at the theater from the law office, and I'm like, uh-oh, what is this? And I open it, and it's a letter saying that, you know, his 7 or 8-year-old daughter, I don't want to give anything away, but he asked me to write her a letter of inspiration, and he was going to give it to her on her 16th birthday. And he's been doing this with any women that his daughter has found inspirational, whether they're actresses or athletes or whatnot, and he was going to give it to her so that on her sweet 16, she could see all of these remarkable women, and I just think it's so sweet. And then, and Hope that wrote her these letters over the years, giving them insight on what, how to be, you know, any advice to be a strong woman and how to follow your dreams. And I just thought that was so cool. And I thought, my goodness, like, this little girl saw Wicked, and this father thought, I'm going to write the girl playing Elphaba a letter because my daughter was so affected by the show. That's the other thing too, is that it's hard for me sometimes, you know, when people say, oh, I just love you, I love you so much. I say, thank you, I appreciate that. You love Elphaba. And, you know, so you just give her some props too, because that's, I think, what we all have fallen in love with, right? So I definitely think that at this point, there was Kim Holler had donated to my favorite charity. I had asked, I said, listen, you guys are always sending me such wonderful gifts, and I appreciate it, but... you know, if you want to spend your money, if you want to give to this charity, that'd be awesome. I think that also on that vein, if someone has sent me a letter or a gift and I don't get back right away, I try, I really do. Or if I'm not taking a picture of it and tweeting it, it doesn't mean that I didn't like it. It's just that it's hard to keep up sometimes with all of it. And I really do appreciate all that. And I really also appreciate when y'all share your stuff with me on Twitter and whatnot. I really do. I'm interested in people and getting to know people, you know, as much as I can through the internet. Anybody that I did not mention, you are not forgotten. I know who you are, you know, all of you guys. It's just off the top of my head, I was just thinking of moments and you know, I've seen Val so many times at the show, and Anna and Claire and Courtney. I don't know if I mentioned her before, but yes, I know all y'all. And there's other people too that I know are following me and that I talk to on Twitter sometimes who, you know, maybe aren't as out there and vocal, but I know you're there and I see you and I appreciate it. So thank you.
That is so great. That's such a wonderful giving attitude. So what are some dream roles that you'd like to perform that you haven't done yet?
Well, Elphaba was the dream, and I've been doing that. It's just going to sound so funny. I love the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding. It reminds me of my life and my childhood and my adult life. My family is, I come from a big Italian family, but my grandfather was from a part of Italy that he was also Greek. I would tell us that all the time. He said, my last name is Zavino, but my mother was Greek and we're Greek. And so he had so many qualities when I saw that movie. Of those, I was like, oh my gosh, I am. And so I always said that if they ever made that into a musical, that I want to play that part because I get her. It's that same feeling I had when I saw Wicked, and I was like, I get that girl, I get Elphaba. When I saw that Mendy Carter regretting, I was like, I get Tula, I get her, I want to play that. So somebody needs to write that, please, and I want to do it. That's my dream role. I know, it's so weird, it's not even written yet, but
we're putting,
you
know, that one out there.
I'm putting it out there.
Oh, I love it. So if you weren't a performer, what career do you think you'd be in? Do you know?
I think that I'd either be teaching. I still do love to teach, and I really want to open some sort of school in New Jersey or some kind of performing arts program because I can't not teach. I'll be teaching Sunday. I teach as much as I can. I love it. I love the kids. I learn so much teaching. You guys know how much you can learn teaching, right? I mean, I just think it's wonderful. It's a skill that's come as naturally to me as performing. Probably teaching, and then if that was somehow not a choice for me, I would have gone into neuroscience. I love the brain and I love the study of the brain. I know you're like, where did that come from? But yeah, that's what I'd do.
Well, that's just awesome. I just love it. And it's funny, actually, one of the other ladies who stood by for Elphaba, Meredith K. Clark, I don't know if you're familiar with her, but I think her.
Yeah, I know that. She was my standby on the tour.
Yeah, I knew that. Hello.
Yeah, so yeah, she was all into that too. I know.
I think her undergrad was in neuroscience, which is just so cool. Okay, so we let a couple of fans submit questions for this interview because we had Sarah Bedford, who answered a trivia question correctly. We asked about how much time it takes for each interview for us to get it processed and everything on the blog, and she got it the closest. And the actual answer was it takes somewhere in the ballpark of 3 or 4 hours per interview, including the recording time, to get everything taken care of as far as editing and all that. And so, Donna,
okay.
Sarah's question for you was, while you were growing up, who was your biggest inspiration in becoming a performer?
Oh, wow. Well, I'd have to say, the first thing that popped into my head was my grandfather, who is, he's no longer with us, but my late grandfather definitely inspired me. He was a carpenter, but loved to play music. He played trumpet. He was not, it wasn't something that, back in the day, he came over here from another country, and he was like, well, I'm not going to be able to make a living doing that. You go into the family business, which was, you know, being a carpenter and building homes. But he played his music anytime he could, and he truly instilled in me the idea that I could do anything I wanted. So there was that. And then in terms of other performers, I saw the West Side Story movie, and that inspired me to want to get into, that made me love theater. But before that, I was really, films and old films and a lot of the older actors. I loved Natalie Wood, who also was in West Side Story. So that was sort of what inspired and who inspired me.
That is really cool. And then these next two questions are from Mark Phillips. And Mark won our essay contest for the 10th anniversary of Wicked, and he's joined us on some other parts of this podcast. The first one, do you think social media like YouTube has hurt or helped theater?
I think that social media is part of our world now. I think it is inevitable. I think that it's both. I think that, like anything, not even just theater, social media can, he's asking specifically YouTube. So specifically with YouTube, I think that it helps and it hurts it. I think that, you know, there's nothing like live theater. And if folks, are illegally videotaping shows and selling them or trading them, that can be a real problem. And it's not cool, but YouTube is also a great tool for people to learn about things that they otherwise wouldn't see. I think the bootlegging gets really out of control, but at the same time, I understand that, I think YouTube is great when people post things of themselves, young performers who want to try it out and put something on YouTube and get feedback. I think that's great. But I also think that people have to understand that live theater is an art form and it's a craft, and that it's not just putting a video on YouTube and that's it, and you know, you're an overnight sensation. There's a lot that goes into live theater. Basically, I don't know if I'm even answering the question correctly, but my point is that YouTube is here. It has its place. I think that it can really help sometimes in terms of exposing certain people who aren't exposed to live theater. They can get a sense of it. But I hope that it encourages them to get to a theater or get involved in theater. It is not a substitute for a live theater. That's my answer. That was the last few sentences. So.
I think that's a pretty good way to put it.
I got there, Isaac. It was a roundabout way.
And then his other question was, we hear a lot about bloopers that happen on stage and little technical problems. Have you ever had anything memorably funny happen backstage during a show?
Right. I mean, I had told you about the blackout, and I told you about falling on stage. Well, backstage, especially as a standby, I mean, funny things happen all the time because we're laughing and just talking about our day. And I feel so boring because offhand I can't think of anything. Well, yes, I can. Actually, this is so silly, but my dresser will make me laugh sometimes all the time. And there was one time that it was like everyone was like, ooh, it's Mercury retrograde. Things are going wrong. And I guess like, and it was like a weird show or something. And she started singing in an intermission when I was getting painted green. Twinkle, twinkle, little retrograde. How I wish you'd go a retro way. And we all just died laughing, you know. And it was just really funny. There's a lot of really funny characters that work backstage, and they definitely crack me up. So that was funny.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it was cute.
So to kind of wrap it up, what advice do you think you would give to aspiring performers? Do you have any kind of nuggets of wisdom to share?
Yes, I have advice that I always say this, and I'll say it again. I said it before, but I'm going to say it again. That first of all, you are enough. I mean, that doesn't mean, oh, you don't train and go to classes but be you. You have to be you. That is what gets people jobs, is just being you. And sometimes that's work. That is the hardest work sometimes, is figuring out, who am I and what do I do? So that when you're going on auditions, it's not like, what do they want and what can I give them? I mean, we, of course I want to get the job, but it's like, what can I go in there and just basically take every opportunity you can and use it as an opportunity to act. And tell, listen, I took a class this morning and F. Murray Abraham was there and he talked to us and he's one of the greatest. If you don't know who he is, Google him. He's one of the greatest actors of all time. And he said that, take your date planner or your iPhone, whatever, and put in there a couple times a week a little note or memo to yourself with a question that says, do I still love it? And really ask yourself that question. Because if you don't really love it, if you just want the glory or the fame or want to feel validated, don't do it. Because it's really about the work. It's about loving the work and finding yourself in the work and through the work. I really believe that. And I think that we can forget that. And you have to always check in with yourself. Do I love it? Sometimes I don't love, you know, missing my family and being on the road. And I don't love, you know, going on auditions and 95% of the time being told, nope, we don't want you for the job. You're this, you're that. Or, no, we're just not, we want a bigger name. Or, nope, you're too short. You're too thin. You're too fat. You're this, you're that. No, I don't like any of that. I love the work. And if you love the work, you will work and it's a beautiful life if you choose it, if you really love it. And I'm totally taking what he taught this morning because it sort of ties into the whole thing of teaching too and how everything's a learning experience. And that's how I approach it. So when I have an audition, I'm like, this is an opportunity for me to do something I love. It's an opportunity for me to just act. So I'm going to just say that, like, really make sure you love it and know that there's only one you. You are enough as you. You can always improve upon skills, but you are what is up there and in the room, and that's enough.
That is just so wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this, Donna. This has been just
thank you guys. I feel like you know I'm a talker, so I feel like you know Elphaba, like, try not to talk so much. So I hope I didn't, you know, eat up too much of your time. But I really enjoyed this. So thank you.
Not at all. We have loved it.
And the listeners are going to love this.
But thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
This was fun.
All right. Well, have a wonderful evening. Great weekend,
you
okay?
Too.
You too. Bye-bye.
You
okay.
Too.
Right. Bye.
Listeners, you can look for Donna's album, Beautiful Dreamer, on Ghostlight Records, available on iTunes and Amazon beginning on December 10th. Stay tuned also for Submissions Only Season 3. And finally, you can see Donna beginning on November 13th in the off-Broadway show Stars of David, opening in New York at the Daryl Roth Theater in Union Square. Tickets are on sale now. And for any more information, please feel free to go to www.donnavivino.com or find Donna on Twitter. Her username is @DonnaVivino with no spaces. So, and let us know if you see Stars of David, because we've heard it is a really great show, and I know there's a lot of people who really enjoyed it in its regional premiere, and we're sure you'll enjoy it off-Broadway, so be sure to let us know if you see it. Tweet us what you thought of it, and we'll probably retweet you. So, thank you all for listening to the 10th Anniversary Podcast. Your feedback and your constant support means so much to us, and we really appreciate you always listening. As always, please get in touch if you have any comments or questions, and otherwise, we'll see you in 2 weeks for the next podcast. Bye, guys.